Welcome to the Physiological Reviews podcast. I'm Kara Keehan. Today we'll discuss the recently published article titled Genome-Wide Association Studies of Cardiovascular Disease. Joining me today are Deputy Editor Dr. Carol Ann Remy and authors Dr. Connie Bazina and Dr. Jeanette Erdman. Let's learn more. Dr. Remy?
Thank you, and welcome to all to this very exciting podcast. And it's really my pleasure to today cover this very important topic, which may not be something that physiologists are used to working with. However, I do believe that genome-wide association studies and genetic studies will play an increasingly important role in physiology and pathophysiology. And so it's my great pleasure to be accompanied today by the two authors of this recent review, which is entitled Genome-Wide Association Studies of Cardiovascular Disease. And this was written by the authors, Professor Jeanette Erdman and Professor Connie Bazina, in addition to Drs. Roddy Walsh and Sean Jurgens. So, welcome, Professor Jeanette Erdman. She is a professor of cardiogenetics at the Institute for Cardiogenetics of the University of Lübeck in Germany. And her main interest is unraveling the genetics of cardiovascular disease and myocardial infarction to develop novel therapeutic targets. And I also welcome Professor Connie Bazina. She's professor of molecular cardiogenetics at the Amsterdam University Medical Center and University of Amsterdam, the Netherlands. And her research is aimed at unraveling the genetic basis of rare inherited cardiac disorders, including cardiomyopathies and inherited arrhythmia syndromes. So Jeanette and Connie, welcome, and thank you for joining us, and thank you again for your wonderful contribution to Physiological Reviews. Genome-wide association studies are aimed at identifying the genetic variants that underlie or that are associated with certain disorders, diseases, or particular traits, such as, for instance, ECG parameters or other cardiac traits. But Jeanette, can you maybe explain to us why is it so important that we study these genetic variants in the first place?
As we all know, genetic variants can influence our individual susceptibility to develop various diseases. And this includes common variants and rare variants and common and rare diseases. And to understand the genetic basis of a disease can help us to, for instance, identify potential targets for therapeutic intervention and in the long term to develop more personalized treatments. So it's important that we know the basis of a disease and then we can follow up therapeutic options. So this is why we need to understand what is the genetic basis of a disease.
Thank you. And we all know, of course, that sometimes disorders can be caused by very rare variants that can lead to very severe disorders. But can you also explain a little bit more to what extent more common variants can also modify disease risk?
In genetics, we have on the one side monogenic diseases and on the other side, other end of the spectrum, polygenic diseases. And in monogenic diseases, we know that one causal variant, a rare one, is affecting the disease. So a rare variant with a strong effect is associated with a phenotype and somehow defines if a person is getting sick or stay healthy. In polygenic diseases, it's different. Here, it's not one rare variant, but maybe even thousands of common variants that are causing the disease, or actually not really causing, but are associated with an increased risk to get a disease. And that's a big difference, that these common variants have only very small effects and not, it's totally different to rare variants causing a monogenic disease.
I can add something to that. So essentially, while in a common complex disorder, coronary artery disease, etc., we've long known that these disorders are genetically complex, like as Jeanette mentioned, they are genetic susceptibility relies on the contribution of many genetic variants. On the other hand, in the rare cardiac disorders that typically affect young individuals, our starting point in the search of genetic factors was actually the monogenic paradigm. And indeed, we've managed to identify quite a few genes. The community has identified quite a few genes that cause these disorders using the monogenic paradigm. However, what we've seen is that a large number of patients remain mutation negative when we test the established genes. So that essentially set us to think that perhaps even in those disorders, a subgroup of patients may have a more complex genetic etiology, where instead of monogenic inheritance, we have polygenic inheritance, where again, one would need to accumulate multiple genetic variants to reach the threshold to display the disease.
So Connie, could you maybe explain to us the basic approach of a genome-wide association study?
So essentially, in a genome-wide association study, we're comparing the frequency of common genetic variants. So we genotype common genetic variants spread around the genome, and we essentially compare their frequency in cases versus controls. So that would be a classical case-control study design. Another commonly used design is the quantitative study design, where one would then look for association between these common variants and quantitative traits, such as ECG parameters or parameters of left ventricular structure and function. So these would be the two main study designs that we employ in genome-wide association studies.
So by comparing, let's say, the prevalence of the variants in, let's say, a control population as opposed to a disease population, for instance, you can then make assumptions or can make conclusions about whether or not these genetic variants contribute to the risk for that particular disease. Is that correct?
Indeed, what we need to take care of is the fact that we're testing millions of variants spread around the genome. So one important factor that we need to take into account in these studies is the multiple testing burden. So we do need to correct for multiple testing, apply very stringent statistical thresholds. And indeed, the aim is to identify risk variants for disease or variants associated with quantitative parameters that could be representing pathways involved in disease, as are the ECG parameters, for instance, that are very relevant endophenotypes or intermediate phenotypes for the arrhythmia syndromes.
So Jeanette, you mentioned that GWAS can be applied to both common and rare disorders. Your field of interest is the area of myocardial infarction. Can you tell us what have been the most relevant findings from GWAS studies in the area of myocardial infarction?
So starting in 2007, with our very first GWAS for CAD, we now just finished our last big meta-analysis, and now we know more than 300 risk variants for CAD. One challenge over the last years was to assign or to annotate each of these risk loci. If you perform a GWAS, in the end, you get SNPs. Yeah, and then you need to somehow annotate these SNPs to a gene because you want to know what is the gene that is underlying this genetic association and actually what is increasing the risk for a disease. So this is really a challenge. And so from coming from a SNP, then we annotate each loci and try to identify the causal gene at the locus. And from there, we can actually really think about the pathogenesis or the pathophysiology, because what we actually want, we want to understand the biology of a disease. And from what we now know, if you look back and at all these risk loci, first we could somehow confirm pathways that we already know that it are somehow connected to the disease, like lipids, for instance. So we find a lot of risk loci related to lipid metabolism. So this is something. Then we could also confirm inflammation is something that plays a big role in the pathogenesis of CID. But most interesting is that we also could identify novel signaling pathways that were not so known to play such a major role, like, for instance, NO signaling. So this is something where GWAS studies are really helpful to identify novel things. So pathways that are related to the disease that we have not thought about in the beginning. This, I guess, is the most important lesson that we learned from our GWAS. Because if you identify novel genes or novel pathways, you can then go a step further and try to develop novel therapies. Yeah, this is actually what is our real goal. We need novel therapies for CAD.
So, Connie, your focus is more the rare disorders, the rare cardiac disorders. Could you elaborate a little bit more on the most relevant findings and insights of the last years?
So essentially, an example that I like very much is about molecular insights that we obtained in the pathogenesis of Brugada syndrome. So we have known for a very long time that the cardiac sodium channel plays a central role in disease pathogenesis in Brugada. And GWAS has essentially identified different pathways that actually converge on the biology of the sodium channel. So we've identified common genetic variants around the sodium channel gene itself. Essentially, these control the dosage, that is the level of expression of the cardiac sodium channel. We've identified genetic variation around transcription factor genes, which now determine the dosage of those transcription factors, and then downstream of those, the dosage of the cardiac sodium channel, as they are transcription factors that are involved in determining the level of expression and the patterning of the cardiac sodium channel. But most recently now, we've also identified trafficking along microtubules as a new molecular mechanism that underlies the level of expression of sodium channel at the cardiomyocyte membrane. So indeed, by studying a SNP in the vicinity of EB2, of MAPRE2 encoding EB2 and binding protein 2, we obtained insights now into this new molecular pathway of sodium channel regulation.
That's very exciting. And again, underlining the importance of all the information that can be obtained from these genetic studies. But in contrast to the common disorders that Jeanette studies, Connie, you study rare disorders, so it must be difficult to get enough patients with these rare disorders, because I assume that for GWAS studies, you need a large number of patients to find these associations. So how do you proceed then?
Indeed, that's a very good point. So while Jeanette can study hundreds of thousands of individuals from the general population, most of our patients are obtained through tertiary referral centers, and we accumulate, we try to expand our patient sets by accumulating patients from referral centers worldwide. But still, patient numbers remain limiting. So what we then try to borrow genetic insights from the study of the relevant endophenotypes. As I said, ECG parameters are relevant endophenotypes for the arrhythmia syndromes. Cardiac magnetic resonance imaging parameters are relevant endophenotypes for the cardiomyopathies. And what we do, we conduct then, not ourselves, but we use information from that colleagues generate on these endophenotypes. So what they do is they conduct genome-wide association studies on these endophenotypes in large biobanks, such as the UK biobank. Thereby identifying now common genetic variants that control these endophenotypes. What we see when we correlate the genetic findings from our rare disorders with those endophenotypes, we find a very strong genetic correlation, meaning that SNPs that underlie susceptibility to these disorders also modulate these endophenotypes in the general population. So that kind of rationalizes the concept then of studying endophenotypes to further our insights into genetic susceptibility for these disorders. And more recently, we've started using the MTAG approach, the multi-trait analysis of GWAS approach, where we actually combine GWAS data sets from disease populations and these endophenotype GWAS to enhance the statistical power for risk variant discovery in these disorders. And it's pretty powerful technique to identify such variants.
So in light of this, Connie, what do you think is an important challenge at the moment for GWAS?
An important obstacle to functional follow-up studies of GWAS loci is the fact that GWAS doesn't point us to a particular gene. GWAS points us to a locus in the genome where there is the causal gene, but we don't know which gene is the causal gene. Now, most of the time we've learned through recent insights that the closest gene is oftentimes the causal gene. But still, we would like to have more evidence before we embark into laborious functional studies that can take quite considerable effort to prove causality. So what we try to do is associate the SNP that we link in GWAS to other molecular phenotypes that can give us some insights into the gene involved. So what we can do, we can associate the SNP with molecular phenotypes such as the expression of neighboring genes, such as the level of expression of proteins, or also we can use information such as chromatin contact, where we look for a physical interaction between the associating region at a GWAS locus and, for instance, the promoter or regulatory elements of neighboring genes. So we use different means of trying to narrow down into a candidate gene that we can then study functionally. For physiologists, it's also important to mention that a recent study has integrated all these different levels of evidence, such as expression QTL, distance to the nearest gene, chromatin contact, etc., into a type of scoring system. And this has been integrated into a portal at the Open Targets web portal, where one can simply put in a SNP of interest and the most likely gene at that locus can be found. So basically, they have come up through a machine learning approach and also trying this on a gold standard set of genes where there is a high SNP gene confidence. And basically, the scoring system is now accessible through a portal where one can access the likely causal gene at GWAS loci.
Thank you. So clearly, we can take the genetic information and ultimately narrow it down to the functional studies. But this approach, what you mentioned, can actually help prioritize which of those genes or genetic variants would be most relevant to study functionally in order to get more functional insight and hopefully identify also even new therapeutic targets. But in addition to that, Jeanette, in the end, by identifying genetic variants, is it also possible to identify patients who are at increased risk for certain disorders? Is that something that will be feasible?
Yes. So actually, this is the idea of polygenic risk scores. So the idea is that you actually sum up the risk variants in a given patient, and the higher the number of risk variants someone is carrying, we assume that this person has a higher risk for disease. And the idea is, I guess we started with this 10 years ago, but only maybe the last 3 to 4 years, reliable polygenic risk scores have been established. We can now identify patients relatively early in life. This is the idea, that you actually identify a person that is at a higher risk for instance, for CAD, at a younger age and not only after he has his heart attack. So this is something that is a benefit of using polygenic risk scores. However, we need to admit that polygenic risk scores are not in the clinic right now. So it's still not established as a clinical tool, so to speak.
And currently, Jeanette, what would you say is the biggest limitation that you're facing when doing GWAS?
The main problem, I would say, is the European-centered GWAS data we currently use for instance, for generating polygenic risk scores. So most, I guess, more than 80-90% of all GWAS have been done in European samples. So there's a big gap in relation to other populations. So this is a problem because actually we know that polygenic risk scores, for instance, are very population specific. And so you cannot apply a polygenic risk score that has been developed in the European population to a South Asian population. This does not work. And even we had a publication just 2 or 3 years ago that we could show that even in Germany, you cannot transfer a polygenic risk score from Bavaria, for instance, in the southern part of Germany to the northern part of Germany. So, and this is something we need to realize, we need to admit, and we need to change this. We need more GWAS in other populations.
So clearly, the GWAS studies can definitely provide more insight into pathophysiology. It can identify novel disease mechanisms and hopefully, ultimately, also novel therapeutic targets. And the concept of identifying through these polygenic risk scores, identifying patients at an increased risk for a certain disease is very important. Future application that can hopefully be translated to the clinic. Having said that, it is very clear that there is still a lot of work to be done, especially on the functional side, which of course is where the physiology community can play a major role. So I would like to thank both Jeanette and Connie for this very interesting discussion on this, the GWAS, the genetic approaches to identify the genetic variants important for disorders within the cardiac disease realm. I think it's an incredibly important concept and an important approach that is being increasingly introduced and used within different disorders, studying pathophysiology and physiology. And I would like to thank you both, and I would like to thank you all for listening. And we hope to see you again in the next Physiological Reviews podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Physiological Reviews podcast. For more episodes like this one, visit journals.physiology.org/journal/physrev or subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify.